everybody. This is Gordon, WU2TTT. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. TechNet, are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie, that was a good answer, we think. We'll be finding out shortly, I guess. All right, this is K2BAR. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, Technical Net. That is brought to you weekly. The frequency of 146.955 MHz. A community repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, located in Alpine, New Jersey. PL is 141.3. I said 141.3 Hertz. The offset is minus 600 kilohertz. This net is a little different than other nets in that it's about having a conversation. We need participants to have a conversation. Conversation is going to be about any number of things, including but not limited to amateur radio, electronics, computing, telecommunications, the natural arts and sciences that underlie our wonderful hobby, what we've done in the hobby, what we aspire to do, things we aspire to do again, and of course the ever popular things we never ever want to do again. And of course, it's also about swap and shop and for sale and items like that. So if you have a for sale or wanted item or have a swap item, please let it know. If you have a giveaway item, let me know. No, just kidding. Anyway, just kidding. No, my wife says no. She's here. No. And Jeff WI says no, but you can post it anyway. It's all good. Okay, so the way this works is we check in kind of a different way than normal. We check in by call sign group, and we indicate we give our call sign, we give our name, and then we indicate we have a question, comment, for sale, swap, or wanted items, some combination of those wonderful things. The more the merrier, by the way. And of course, none of the above. That ever popular, none of the above is in fact popular, because without knowing who is checking in, we really can't tailor that to meet your needs, and we might not even be able to call upon you to answer a question or provide your opinion or something, and we can't do that unless we know you're there. Every week after the net, I hear from many, many people, "Oh, I listened to the net last week. It was great. Why didn't you check in?" "I didn't want to bother anybody. Why didn't you check in?" It's like, here we go. So we're not going to have that problem. However, before we start checking everybody in, I need an official logger for tonight, as I am mobile. Is there someone who could do the logging function? Please call K2BAR.
Yeah, Gordon, I'll, this is WA2UMP, and I will be the official logger of this evening.
Most appreciated. Thank you very much, Mr. Jim. Alrighty, so... Well, hell, let's start with WA2UMP. What are your intentions for this evening, Mr. Jim?
Okay, Gordon. I do have a quick question, so I'll put myself down for a question.
Most excellent. Thank you, Jim. Any other whiskeys?
W2AEK with a comment.
Good evening, Don. Welcome with your comment. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey 2 Lima Golf Bravo. No question, just listening.
W2 Lima Golf Bravo. Got your no questions or whatever. What is your name, sir? And what is your quest? Oh, we got your quest. What is your name?
Sorry about that. Handle over here is Larry, located in Haverstraw, New York.
Thank you, Larry, and welcome aboard again. Any other whiskeys?
This was Charlie.
Boy, we got a succession of doubles, but I got it. WE2R, Charlie, your intentions?
Just listening, Gordon.
Roger, that's right, I'm sorry. A little Dane bread. All right, who was the station who lost not once, but maybe twice?
Whiskey 2 Sierra Echo, no traffic.
Mr. Bruce, Whiskey 2 Sierra Echo, thank you very much. Any other whiskeys?
W2
2 JEK, did you get me? My power connector came loose.
I'm sorry, it was Whiskey 2 Sierra Echo, Bruce. No traffic.
Don, we do have you down for a comment. Is in there also.
We got you for a comment. And we have WA2UMP, W2JEK, WE2R, and W2SE, and W2Lima Golf. I forget what that was, Larry. We got him too. Anybody else with a whiskey?
W2DKE, Frank, just listening.
W2Tango, Kilo Echo, reflecting his college fraternity. Hello, Frank. Long time no hear. And welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey 2 Mike Whiskey.
Whiskey 2 Mike Whiskey. Good evening. Will you 2 Mike Whiskey go with your name and your intentions?
Apologize that for you, Gordon. Handle here is Kurt. That's Kilo Uniform Romeo Tango. I'm President Mobile in the town of Montrose, New York, Westchester County, northern Westchester County. W2MW.
Kidoke. Hi, Kurt, and your intentions? He said just listening. Okay. Very good. Any other whiskeys? Okie dokie. Let's go to the Novembers.
K2VAR, this is November 8, Mike Alpha Romeo. Hello, Gordon, this is David. No questions, no comments for as long as I could be around just listening.
Senor David, NAMAR from K2VAR. Roger that. Any other Novembers? Okie dokie. Let's go to the ever popular Alphas. Okay, and brace ourselves. Kilos.
KB2NLA, Chris, just listening.
Yes, hello, Chris. Good to see you last night and your darling, I think that's your younger daughter. Alrighty, any other kilos?
KC2ZFM, Bob, and also just listening for Ty Gordon.
ZFM. Welcome aboard, Bob. Good to hear you again. Any other kilos? Okay, free for all, jump ball, whatever you want to call it. Any call sign, any area. Please call K2VAR.
Kilo Bravo 2 India Papa Lima.
Kilo Bravo 2 India Papa Lima. Your name and intentions, please. Thought that was clear. KB2IPL from K2BAR. Your name and your intentions, please. All right. Well, anybody else for the net? All righty. Well, with no further ado, it's W2JEK's ball. Hello, Don. It's over to you.
K2BAR in the net, W2JEK, getting everybody. Bauer will be running its next VE test session Friday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. at Westwood Regional High School, which is located in the township of Washington, New Jersey, on Ridgewood Road. Coming, please, test fee of $15. By ID, like a driver's license or a passport or something with a photo on it, or two forms of non-photo ID. Have a license, bring your current license and a copy of that license. And if you want to use a calculator, that's fine. The calculator has to be a calculator. And as other devices such as iPods, cell phones, etc., may not be used as calculators. Have licenses that far beyond the 2-year grace period can get credit for their what they held if they test the current technician. I'll have more detail on that. If you have any problems with that. Also, anybody who's a technician right now was licensed before March 21st, 1987. Paper upgrade to general class. So it's back to net. W2JEK.
Okay, very good, Don. Anybody have any questions for Don about the upcoming test session or licensing in general? Okay, Don, I have a question for you. What is the magic date by which someone can do the paper upgrade to general from technician?
That's March 21st, 1987. The technician license, 1951, back when I had it. So March 21st, 1987. Questions. That time they split it up into a technician license with 25 questions, class license with 20 questions. But it took the license, the 50 question test before March 21st, 1987. Difference between a tech and a general. Hold speed. The tech was 5 words a minute. The general letter test was 5 words a minute. Because the code is now going away, you have paper upgrade to a general. Back to net. One other thing. Question 4 will be changed for the extra class at the end of June. Back to net. W2JK.
Right. And then the following June, nothing expires, correct?
I'm not sure about that. I don't have my paperwork handy right now. I think there's a gap in there. There's three licenses and there's a four. Each one go for 4 years and then there's a year gap in there. I don't think there is, but I'll check with that and I'll come back later with it.
Roger. Okay. I seem to recall that the year between the extra and the technician is a pass. Nothing moves for an extra year. All righty. Thank you, Mr. Don. And Mr. Jim, you had a comment or a question. I think it was a comment. A question. So let's go with your question.
Okay, Gordon. I do have a question. And I now have 5 antennas. And all of them, of course, have a coax lead-in, and I try to keep everything neat, but it often falls short of that. And I'm wondering what other folks are doing for cable labels. I tried to make labels by cutting up a yellow sticky, writing on, say, 40 meters or elk log periodic, and then going over it with the transparent packing tape. And invariably what happens is that sometimes later it falls off. And I looked online for cable labels, what they have is usually something that you can put on, but it kind of hangs off of the side, if you know what I mean. I didn't know if that was the most aesthetically pleasing. So I'd just like to ask the group how people are labeling their coax, and hopefully maybe I could get some ideas for myself.
Sure. Now, you have a unique situation that your antennas are indoors, are they not?
All 5 are indoors, but from where I sit right here, they could be, you know, some are in the attic, some are placed in various closets or whatnot. So they're at, they're still remotely, I can't see them.
Okay, so there's a couple things you can do. You can code them by simply putting a variable number of cable ties on each one in a contrasting color, or even color code them. Sometimes I've been known to use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and you just kind of look at them and you know which antenna line it is, position 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. The other you could do is color code them with different color cable ties. That's always good, unless you're colorblind, of course. And it's not so good. And, there's a few other things you could do. P-Touch labels are another good choice. If you want something that's right on there that you don't mind grabbing the coax and looking at it, don't make it too close to the connector, though. That tends to be counterproductive, because then you just can't get enough flex to get it back in your eyeballs and take a look at what it says. That's what I've used over time. Plus, I used to use the Radio Shack ones, the yellow ones that were off the side like the ones you just described. but some people don't like those for the reason you described. Unfortunately, they don't make them anymore, so you have to use other brands. But I like them. Yellow with a white patch you could write on. Anybody else have solutions, please call K2PAR.
This is N8MAR.
Mr. Dave.
Yeah, I actually gave some thought to that myself because I have all my cables labeled, and I went to Harbor Freight, and I purchased for about $2 a bag of zip ties that are special zip ties. They're called label zip ties, and they have a little square at the end of them about where the circular connection is, where the other end of the zip tie would come through. And you could get yourself a Sharpie, like a fine Sharpie, not a thick one. And I labeled all my antennas that way, and you could zip tie them tight enough anywhere on the cable on your coax so that they don't slide. Or, of course, you don't have to make them that tight, and they will slide, depending on what you're looking for, if you're, like, labeling a loop. But I have all my cables labeled that way, and for $2 a bag of about 50 of them, you really can't go wrong. You just need yourself a good fine Sharpie.
Okay, very good. So that's sort of like the modern equivalent of the ones that Radio Shack used to sell. Anybody else have suggestions?
Okay, okay.
We have two stations, JEK first.
Yeah, well, I have a linen tag. It looks like a shipping tag. It has a piece of string on it like a shipping tag. And it's about 1 inch by 2 inches. And I don't know whether you can buy these in the store anymore or not. What you used to use. You can write on there, this is for the 40 meter dipole, connects to antenna slot so and so or whatever, so that when you're fired to a lightning storm, you know where to put it back. It's what it's for. So, I don't know if you can get those or not. One other thought is somebody mentioned cable ties, but just getting some colored tape, different colors of. Plastic tape and just, you know, like red tie or something like that. Just put a turn tape or red tape or blue or whatever. It might be any way too, depending on how much information you want, just a cable code or you want something written on it, like I do with the cable ties. These shipping tag things, they're good because I can write on them exactly where they're supposed to come. Back to that, W2JEK.
Good idea, Don. Very, very good. Who's in the station?
Lead 2SE.
Okay, Bruce.
Got a bit of a little laundry list here. You can use color-coded electrical tape and color on each end of the wire. You can cut the electrical tape up into stripes. So if you only have one color of electrical tape, like white or red or orange or whatever color you like, you can put different numbers of stripes on both ends of the cable. When you're putting on electrical tape, make sure the last wrap and a half has zero stretch and zero tension. You don't want to stretch that anyway, otherwise it'll shrink back on you and give you flags and tend to unravel over time. The other option is different colors of nail polish, or again, your own stripes with nail polish or dots or whatever you like on both ends of the cable. It'll be 2SE.
Very nice, yep. Very good. Anybody else?
Okay, ZFM.
See.
You know, we had a lot of stations. ZFM first.
K2BAR. My preference, I go high tech, and I'll use the Avery address label, especially the, like, the 2x4 ones, and set them up in the printer, print them on the side, and then you can get just about as much information as you possibly want on it. And then you just double it over on the cable. And back to net.
Okay, very good. Who was the other station?
82, IVC.
Okay. 82, IVC. W2TTT, K2BAR. Go ahead.
Gordon. Hey, it's Manfred. Good evening, guys. P-Touch would be my first choice, and if anybody can still get a hold of those old car touch-up paints, they have a brush that pops out when you shake it, you lean it forward, the little brush pops out. So
That's always quick and dirty.
Very good, Manfred. Thank you very much. KD2IV, CW2, TGT. All right, anybody else? All righty. One more time, anybody else with a comment? Okay, I think we've beaten this one to death. Any follow-up? Okay, well, there's our answer. Is there anything else you'd like to ask?
No, that sounds good, Gordon. Quite a few different ideas. I like the notion of being able to write on the label. Color coding also is good, but I won't remember that red is the 40 meter. So I got to have something written on there too. I'll have to do a little bit more Googling so that I can come up see a real product with the some of these ideas. But it's giving me some starting points.
Yeah, what's nice about the P-Touch labels, if they're not going to be mechanically abused or weather abused, is that you can wrap them around and double back on yourself and put the same print on both sides so it can girdle the cable and then make a little flag out of it. It's real cheap that way.
And does that require, I'm looking at Brother P-Touch labels, does that require a little machine to purchase with it?
Yes, exactly. But the ones you can write on are nice too. I mean, you know, that works. But they have a little flag-like thing on the edge of the essentially what amounts to a cable tie.
Okay, I'm seeing a Brother P-Touch label maker for $20. Looks pretty cheap. Maybe I'll look into that one a little bit further.
Yeah, as I think Dave MAR said, you could go to Harbor Freight and pick up some of these labels that just clamp on like cable ties and give you a little flag that you can write on.
Okay. I'll do a little comparison. Very good.
J-E-K.
Mr. Don.
I'm wondering if you get an electrician supply store. They do have cable markers. Telephone company used them. They had different numbers, sort of letters. The field off was like a buffy backing. It was like a Band-Aid kind of a thing, except it was just letters printed on it. Or the supply store. I don't know if you have that in a deal with electricians. Maybe you would have something like that.
Sure. Why not? It's a good idea. You might also check your Lowe's and your Home Depot's, the better ones, like Lodi or Patterson, because they tend to have the better electrical departments, and you find stuff in there, too. Let's go to choices. Anybody else?
W2JK,
yeah? Sure.
Hey Steve, how many of these things do you need?
Jim, how many do you need?
I guess at least five to start.
I think I have enough. I'll try and send you some. I'll get you the address out of the QIZ.com. Is that okay?
Sure.
Thank you.
That's real nice of you, Don. Okay. Anybody else have anything on this topic of labeling cables?
QSC.
Bruce?
One further comment. The Sharpies, if they're doing a lot of heavy handling of the cable, the Sharpies tend to wipe off, as do the thermal print type things like the P-Touch. So if it's going to be subject to abuse, particularly if it's going to be out in weather, you might want to protect it with something else clear or look for some alternate, which is why I like multiple stripes or different colors. And you just mark your antenna switch with the right color on the back and put the band on the front and you're good to go.
Yep. Yeah, and you have to keep in mind, if you have to pull them through an aperture, you know, that you don't want anything too large, it might get hung up. Even with the connector might pass through, but then you can't get the stiff label on the outside
like a flag could get caught up in something, it'd be a real nuisance. All right, anybody else? Okay, I guess that's it for this topic, Tim. What else do we have on the docket?
Okay, we had a total of 12 people sign in, but only my question was the only one, and Don's comment was the only one listed here. So that's the rest was everyone was just signing in with no questions or comments.
Okay, very, very good. So I am looking around for a Raspberry Pi 3's compatible GPS and altimeter. That would be something really, really nifty and neat. So we're trying to kind of sort that out. The other approach is to use the Bluetooth to talk to, let's say, the GPS, and then hardwire the altimeter in. I want to basically get a GPS tracking on a Raspberry Pi and got to do something funky with it. I think it'd be fun to have. Anyway, if anyone has any thoughts about that, do let me know. I don't want to cripple the USB in the process. I want to make sure it all functions properly. So anyway, that's kind of one of my upcoming projects, is to go mess with the Pi 3. Anyway, anything else?
Late check-in.
Late check-in go.
This is November 2, Juliet Delta Hotel, Andre, and just checking in.
Hey, Andre, very good. N2 JDH, very, very good. Let me just take a standby here and point out that we have a Yahoo group that's a closed Yahoo group. It's called ComTech Group, Charlie Oscar Mike, Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, Golf Romeo Uniform, or Oscar Uniform Papa. ComTech Group, the Yahoo group, and if you're interested in participating in it, either get into its homepage and try to post a note and it'll tell you what you got to go do, or go to the webpage itself and tell you what to do to get signed in, or you can shoot me an email at whiskey2tripletango@att.net or att.com. We'll square you away with for the ComTech group, email group. Anybody else? Bruce.
Okay, first of all, for the GPS input, you might want to try contacting Chris, KD2IMV, India Mike Victor. And as far as the altimeter goes, Chris may have some ideas, but the altimeters work on barometric pressure, Gordon. And when the barometric pressure changes, that changes your reference point. So if the pressure drops from, say, 29.1 down from, say, 30.1, that's 1,000 feet of altitude change. So you've got to know the local barometric pressure for any kind of an altitude pressure-based sensor to work properly, which means you've got to find a way to input that and keep it updated and on the mark.
No, I'm fully aware of that. And so anybody that's ever flown knows that you taxi your airplane to the calibration point. It's a point in the airport tarmac that is known for its location and elevation, and you calibrate your altimeter there. So if you're at 925 feet on the tarmac and your altimeter says 930 feet, you correct it appropriately until it says what it is by the well-known point on the from the aeronautical chart.
Actually, if there's an ATIS broadcast on the field, you use whatever is being broadcast by the ATIS. Failing that, if there's power around, they'll give you the altimeter setting. Failing that, if you're en route, you'll get the altimeter setting if you're talking to ATC. And the last thing you do, of course, as you mentioned, Gordon, is field elevation from a particular location. But it's a swag anyway, and those altimeters, at least in aviation altimeters, can be lost by regulation by plus minus I want to say 25 feet.
Yeah, I would imagine. And but that plus GPS gives you some, you know, something to, as a bogey to check against, right?
The GPS will give you altitude, but it is notoriously inaccurate for altitude. I would not rely on it for anything critical.
Yeah, the general rule is that you only use your GPS for altitude is if it agrees with your altimeter.
Steve has tried it a few times for SOTA, and we've seen that thing reading plus minus 200 feet.
Yeah, exactly. It's very hard. All righty, anybody else?
N8MAR with a last minute question.
Yes, sir, and I still have to get to that power thing.
How you doing, Gordon? I don't know if you tried looking at Adafruit. They have a whole bunch of stuff. They do have something for a GPS hat for the Raspberry Pi.
Okay, I'll take a look. I mean, we've had various looks at various GPSs, USB and otherwise. The problem is that very often the serial drivers for the USB get a little confused when you plug in a GPS. So, yeah, we'll see what gives. But we do need to have a more accurate altimeter reading than would be available from the GPS. So we've arranged for someone to do that. So we'll see what gives from there.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's a great little unit. I have four of them, so. And they do work. Sometimes they get a little flaky. They forget where they are, but wireless-wise. But the 3 has wireless built in, so you don't need that little dongle to plug in. So that frees up another USB port.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Anybody else have any ideas?
Who am I with a comment?
Mr. Tony.
I was listening, but I didn't hear the first part of your program, of your net. But I did want to remind everybody that this coming Saturday there is a ham fest out of the Split Rock Amateur Radio Club facility out in Sukasana. Details can be found on the website under Split Rock Amateur Radio Club. That's my only comment.
Yep, very good. Yes, Split Rock Saturday. I don't think I'm going. I got a wedding to go to at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I would dearly love to catch a few extra Z's after this week. I will be at the Fairlawn Radio Club tomorrow night, and which reminds me, Rich Moseson, the editor of CQ Magazine, will be there. So keep that in mind. He'll be speaking on the wonderful intersection of amateur radio and the maker community, you know, the hardware, software, hacker community. So keep that in mind. It should be quite attractive. And bring your toys. Anybody else have any questions on this? Okay, just for reference, the Fairlawn Radio Club is located at 10-10 20th Street in Fairlawn. Doors to the club will be open at 6 p.m. tomorrow. There is going to be coffee, as always, and other basic beverages. And, of course, I think our speaker is due to speak at 7:30. So, keep that in mind. And plus or minus a theatrical production, we'll bag it around 9 o'clock, but who knows. All right, anybody else?
Yeah, N8MAR, just have a question here.
Mr. Dave.
Yeah, this is probably a too broad or general a question, but some of you know I'm looking to put together some kind of portable kit. I don't know if I want an ultralight for hiking or just something for field day, but one of the antenna systems that I was looking at is called Trans World Antenna. Very expensive, but looks like it's a very good vertical dipole, and was wondering if anybody on this net has ever used one or knows of anyone with any success with them.
No, but you've piqued my curiosity. So it's a vertical dipole. That's interesting. So it's an interesting geometry. It's sort of like the radial straight down.
Yeah, it kind of looks like goalposts, top and bottom, for from a football field. It's the weirdest looking antenna I've ever seen, but I went on eham.net, and it's got a 4.8 out of 5, and everybody's raving about them. And they are supposedly great HF antennas. Unfortunately, everything is a la carte, so the setup that I'm looking at is somewhere north of $600, so I don't know that I would spend that kind of money on it, but it looks like a wonderful portable antenna that could be set up in less than 5 minutes. So, but based on the silence, I don't think anybody has any experience unless someone just didn't speak up. But so anyway, that's what I'm looking into. Back to that. This is N8MAR.
Ben.
I'll get you in a second, Bruce. I'm looking at the TW2010, and that's $400 as the MSRP. Good, Bruce.
Okay, David, I've not heard that antenna mentioned whatsoever on any of the SOTA lists recently. The SOTA lists tend to focus on very thin wire dipoles, both center fed dipoles. N-fed half waves are very popular. A few guys have random wires with tuners, usually horizontal. Alex Loop has been a big topic lately, but they're kind of lossy and they're very narrow, so if you're changing frequencies a lot, you move a couple of kilohertz, you got to retune the Alex Loop. There's various other options. Catch me offline and we can talk about it. I can tell you what SOTA guys are doing, but that's mostly for hiking mountaintop. If you're looking for drive-up type things, then your options increase, including antennas on the back of the vehicle.
Yeah, okay, so I'm just looking at here. The quadrupod that comes with it, or comes for it, is not well regarded. A lot of people are using them at home in relatively stealth configurations. While the antenna seems to get good reviews, the stand does not. So that's interesting. There, I also noticed when I did my search, I was given an option by Google to compare it to a buddy pole. So you might want to say Transworld antenna versus buddy pole. I'm also noticing that the Transworld seems to be used on 20 meters and up, not 40 and up. And so that may be an issue as well.
Yeah, the 40 meter is a separate purchase. That's why I said everything is a la carte. And Bruce, this is definitely not a packable antenna. It's a drive-up kit and bag. There's no way you could pack this. It's way too heavy. It's about 20 pounds.
Buddy poles and ham sticks and just put some kind of a mount on your vehicle.
It's a thought. So anyway, I was just wondering if anybody had any experience with them. I've got lots more research to do. But thanks for your comments. I don't want to eat up all the time on the net. This is N8MAR.
Yeah, Dave, I'm just thinking that what you may want to do, if you want something along this line that is probably just about as easy to build, get one of those mounts that allows you to make a ham stick dipole. You know, they have a special mount for that. And so it's got 2 3s, 24s that feed a single connector. And then what you might consider doing is getting either a 2, 3, or 4 split device, so you can put in as many whips as you want and just run it up through a tuner. So it'd be a horizontal or a vertical dipole, but horizontal is more likely. And it would be like a fan dipole based on ham sticks. And the whole thing would probably cost you, you know, just over $100. You know, maybe it would be about $150 or $200. And you'd have, you know, 3, 4, 5 bands. If you want to keep, if you, you know, only want 2 or 3 bands, you probably can do under $100. Comment, go. Station who said comment, please go.
Yes. And I thought of the outfit box. The dome, where it has 3 in the dome, you have 4 on the outside of it, and 1 on the back. That might work.
I didn't copy Andre. Did anyone get the gist of what he was saying?
A comment.
Go ahead, Bruce.
If you're going to do 40 in the daytime, you probably want a horizontally polarized antenna, because at that point it's mostly NVIS and daytime on 40. For the other bands, you can get by with horizontal or vertically polarized, because you're probably doing skip, particularly if you talk about 20 or 17 or something along those lines. And I'm assuming you're talking phone only, David?
Yeah, that's correct, phone only. And honestly, probably I'd hover somewhere between 15 and 40. 10 is pretty quiet these days, but I like Gordon's idea as well. It sounds like a heck of a lot cheaper. So, like I said, I'm going to do more research into it, but I appreciate all these ideas because I still got a lot to learn.
Mr. John, and just examine the hardware. So the first thing you want to do is look for that dipole thingy. The second thing you want to do is ask him for what the options are for stacking multiple hamsticks on the same mount. And they screw into a 3S24 and give you 2, 3, maybe 4 3S24 sockets. And you see how those would screw into that same mount. And from there, you would just imagine which hamsticks you want and go from there. And you could even decide before you leave home what hamsticks you're going to take and which ones you're not. You know, if you took 40 and 20, you'd probably be set up for 15 just fine.
And two.
Station.
Evening, Gordy. N2DXT. Getting in the log and a one-handed comment. You know, 10 states, 150 different parks. I endorse the entry point suggestion of the hamstick dipoles. I've used them many times, and they've always worked very well if you're in a great spot. And certainly the cheapest way in, no question. And I've used it many, many, many times. So just throwing my endorsement in there. N2DXT once again. We'll be listening.
Thomas. Yeah, JDH, go. You're much better.
Sorry about that. I was on the HTN side. I think it was called an octopus antenna or octi antenna, where they took one of those electrical housings where they had the four conduits that come in plus the back hole in it for, I guess, to bring in the main conduits and a dome. I've actually tried it and did it with, I think it was a 70, 20 and a 40, I believe it was, hamstick. I can't remember. One of those configurations. I did it with three different bands. And I pretty much bolted the so-called radios or the shielded side to the conduit, and then I isolated the each hamstick, and I chained them together right into a connector, and that seems to work. But you got to play around with tuning the hamstick. It was a pain, but it does work. So if you're looking at doing something like that, you might be able to get a little housing, or even the adapter that allows you to have three hamsticks in one.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I do, John had some 12-meter hamsticks that he accidentally was shipped. And so I bought a pair of them, and they were the kind where the tip wasn't already provided, not to mention the stinger. So I basically could either stack it on another one or put a, just put a stinger on it and a really long whip. So I took my 12-meter pair and one of those dipole mounts and put it up on my mast on my backyard tower, which rotates, and it gave me a rotatable dipole that with a tuner I have successfully used from 20 meters through 10. And I gotta tell you, it works amazingly well as a horizontal rotatable dipole. Just a pair of hamsticks. It was something I did as an experiment. I've been amazingly pleased with it over the years.
W2JK.
Mr. Don.
Yeah, one thing that I've been using a lot on portable days is the Unset half wave, a wire that's 68 feet long. And I have a homebrew tuner that I use. It's just a coil and a capacitor, but there's a tuner reviewed in the QST today. It's by MTech. It costs $90. It's a small thing. It's good for low power, up to 15 watts. And it sells for $90 assembled or $65 as a kit. And what I found with that is you lay out a radio wire, use an old extension cord, and it's more in so people can see it. And then I throw this wire up in a tree, I've been using it on 15th, 20 and 40, and I know the settings on my tuner, and I just set the tuner and touch up the capacitor, and I have a watt meter with me. Now this tuner has a built-in tuning device, a LED that if you turn the dial to the knobs till the LED goes dim, and you're in business. You don't even need to carry an SWR bridge with you, as I do. But so there are ways to go, depending on how much weight and what you want to do. But I found that a successful thing. It's good for three bands. With the crooner I have now, I think with a little additional series capacitor, it's like a T-network tuner. The one I have is like the half of a T-network tuner, where you have the coax from your radio comes through the capacitor and then out to the antenna. And where it goes out to the antenna, there's a adjustable coil to ground. If you go out to the antenna through on the other side to another through another capacitor, you have the T-network like we usually have. But you get small tuners. They make small tuners for that too. So there's a lot of possibilities out there. Now back to that W2JK.
Okay, Don, that's good. That's good advice. Anybody have any comments?
This is NAMAR. I know I started this topic, but I've got to leave, and I didn't want to just disappear in the middle of it. So I'm going to say 73, and I'll catch you guys tomorrow night, those of you who will be at Fairlawn. Thank you much. 73.
Roger, roger. Okay, thank you, Dave. Good topic. All right, and I'm going to bring my portable power supply and probably a pie or something to play with. We'll see. All right, anybody else have any ideas, anything they want to cover? Alrighty. Well, just a reminder that tomorrow is the Fairlawn meeting, and again, Rich Moseson is our speaker. 7:30 p.m. for the speaker. Doors open at 6 p.m. You're welcome to come and have some coffee and other beverages and snacks, and welcome to enjoy our hospitality, operate our station, mess with our lab, talk with the guys in the conference room. It's going to be a lovely evening. And it's 10-10 20th Street. It's the Fairlawn Community Center. And let's see. And then the next Barra meeting, or next Barra gathering of sorts, is the Kit Night on Tuesday night at Washington Township in the senior room. And so we look forward to seeing you there as well. I'll see you be there this Tuesday. And then... let's see what else. I guess that's all I can think of off the top of my head. Barra meeting is the first Sunday of the month. At 7:30, we gather at 7. And there are no meetings of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club because the governance is private. But anyway. Anybody have any questions? Righty. Well, I want to thank everyone for checking in tonight. It's been an interesting net, and I will be looking over pie toys. And right now, I'm going to call it a day and get some sleep. It's been a busy week, and I got one more day running down to Middletown tomorrow. I got a Cub Scout, a Boy Scout Eagle project tomorrow morning before I go to work. But from 9 until 1. There will be a Bergenfield Green Day, Green Expo, at Bergenfield High School. High school is closed this week, so the town and the school board gave permission for one of our scouts to organize a green expo of sorts for a few hours tomorrow morning, and you're welcome to come. Doors open at 9 a.m. at Bergenfield High School on Prospect. Pardon me, Prospect. That's correct. And you're welcome to come if you so desire. And that's all she wrote. So thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of the repeater, and thank you all for participating, and thank the Bergen Amateur Radio Association and any other ancillary clubs who support amateur radio in our area for jumping in and having a good old time and making this net possible. This is K2BAR W2TTT signing clear and saying 7-3. God bless.
WA2UMP, W2LGB.
W2LGB, WA2UMP. Sounds like Gordon must have signed off.
Yep, he did. I think he closed the net. Yeah, how have you been? I haven't been on the radio that much. I've been just so busy.
Everything has been good. You sound a little different in analog. Not used to hearing you in analog.
No, I spoke to another guy on the way to work the other day on analog, and he said to me, "Would you come back from the dead?" He says, because I'm never on analog. I'm always on the digital world somewhere.
Yeah, you get used to hearing somebody in digital. It's slightly different, although with C4FM, it's pretty close to digital analog, but it's not exactly. So it does sound a little different. Everything is good. I got the Wires X completely working. You missed a good demo Tuesday night. I did make a temporary link on the, with permission of the repeater owners, I'd made a temporary link from 442.9 to the Southern California net out in L.A.
Oh, very good, very good. Yeah, I couldn't make that net at all. I was tied up in a meeting. Oh, man, I'll tell you, it's been busy, the fire department and stuff like that, so I just have my hands full. But anyway, yeah, I got my Wires Xbox working as well. I found the problem over here. One Windows 10 box that I have, for whatever reason, would not let that software load at all, no matter what I did. Admin, opened the firewall, everything, no matter what I did. So I just gave up and put it on a Windows 7 box, and it came to life, and it worked fine. So I just have to sit down and figure out how it works and configure it. And the only thing I don't like is if I'm going to use it on a repeater, I have to hook up either my 400 that I'm on now or my 100 from the car. I hate, like heck, to tie this radio up just as a linking radio. It's such a waste of money. Or send a repeater back to Yaesu. It's a free upgrade if I wanted to do that. I'd just plug it into the repeater. But I don't know. It cost $50 to ship it out there. I sent $50 back, so that's another $100. So for another $100, I could buy another FT-100 and just use that as a link radio. Or I could try the FT-1. I still have that. See if I could make that a link radio. And then it should work.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You hate to eat up a radio. I hate to say it. It might be worth it just to bite the bullet and send it in for a free upgrade. Once you upgrade it, are subsequent upgraded grades downloadable, or you have to mail it every time you want new firmware?
No, obviously it's a board and a hardware upgrade, so yeah, you'd have to send it into that. But the rest of it should be upgradable by firmware. I don't see why not.
I hate to say it, but I think that the best solution for the best outcome would be to bite the bullet and ship it back and let them upgrade it, and you'll have the latest software, won't tie up a radio, and since they're putting in a new board, you'll be able to load future upgrades yourself.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. I have another repeater laying around, another DR1, so it's no big deal. You know, I just take that one down and pop the other one in its place.
Okay. Sounds like it's worth consideration. So I guess I've been pretty busy too at work. Recently got a bit of a break. You know, my company's on strike right now, so I've been retained and I've been working, working in the office. But I put in a 12-hour day, but there's limited, not as many phone calls because everybody else is out, so inadvertently getting a little bit of a break in a convoluted way.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I saw. Oh, man. Well, you can't blame the guys, but it is what it is. Just hopefully it won't be a long strike.
Typically, they're 2 or 3 weeks. Could last much longer. And hopefully, nobody wins by the strike, so hopefully it's resolved so that everybody's reasonably happy. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. There is no winners. Oh, what are you going to do? It's just a lot of stubbornness, mainly on the management side, but what can you do? It's always that way. And whether it's your business or any other business, it's always the same. Anyway, I keep reading the info coming out of Kinect system, so we'll see what goes on there. Hopefully he's going to have a radio for Dayton. It's supposed to be a dual-band radio. I'm waiting to see what that's going to be like. That proves to be very interesting.
Well, he's been promising stuff for years and only delivers half the time, to be honest with you. You know, dual band is not rocket science, but there are some real challenges there coming out with a dual band DMR radio. But if he does come out with it, that'll be a big seller.
Yeah, it'd be an industry first, too, because a lot of it has to do with the DMR part of it. It's quite interesting when you do dual band. D-Star he's going to do, I know that. D-Star, DMR, and Fusion. You know, Fusion's really not that hard. It's like T25, so it's not so bad. It's the D-Star that could be a headache with the radio because you know as well as I do how it is to configure D-Star. It takes a lot of commands and a lot of memory, so. But we'll see what happens. If he comes out with it, that's great. If not, I'm not worried about it. I got enough other radios for every mode anyway.
Okay, sounds good. I've got a little home project that I've been working on. I'm going to make a little amplifier. Well, I'm going to buy the amplifier, but I have to design and build the RF sense switch so that I can switch out in and out the amplifier. It will be followed by a low-pass filter for the DV4 MIDI. So it'll jack it up from the 12 milliwatts to maybe 3 or 4 watts.
Okay, that's a good idea. I know you were mentioning that once before. Yeah, it's very doable, but you got to be careful. If you're going to get the RF sense switch, they already come already made. You don't even have to design the circuitry for that. But you got to make sure you get it with a real fast switching time, especially when you're in the DMR mode, because if it's not fast enough, you're going to fry that thing.
Well, I wasn't even going to attempt DMR with it. I have not seen an RF sensing switch that basically what I would need is it would sense the RF and would switch. It would have basically two relays, a normally closed and a normally open, and it would switch those two. I was going to not attempt to make it fast. I could do it with pin diodes or whatever and make it very fast, but I'm going to use read relays and it'll switch within like 1 to 3 milliseconds, and that will be fast enough for C4FM.
Okay, I think, well, 1 to 3 milliseconds is quite a long time for RF, so I would be very careful. I'd be hesitant to do that at all. I would try to make it a lot faster. I wouldn't even go with mechanical relays with RF. I would probably go with solid state. I wouldn't even use pin diodes. Pin diodes, you know, Motorola used to have a big problem with the front end of their radios. So when the pin diode blew out, the radio receive would go dead, and the repeater would be transmitting as happy as can be. So if you're a half a block away, it's working great. You go 2 blocks away, it doesn't work anymore. So, yeah, I think they got away from those pin diodes. They could be a problem. I know they have the RF sensing switches that are out there. So, yeah, you got to search around the Internet. RF parts might have them. They might be a little pricey, but you know what? That's the way to go, and you want the fast switching time. You really don't want it to lag, especially when you're on any kind of a digital mode. This is W2LGB.
I mean, I can always not use a read relay, but 1 to 3 milliseconds is plenty of time for C4FM or D-Star. I wasn't going to attempt the DMR and have that thing go back and forth.
Yeah, I used an old, believe it or not, when I had my D-Star repeater, I tested it out. I used an old Motorola amp. And I figured, there's a mod for it, you know, with same thing with diodes. But I said, let me try it without the mod and see what it can do. So I gave it a shot, and you know what? The thing ran for a year without a problem, and it was fast enough, the switching, so I just left it alone.